Hey folks, this is Carrie Arentakai reading Keep Track of Losing Days by Drafter, Chapter 3, Family. Author's notes, this chapter is a bit on the shorter side, by which I apparently mean it's only 5,100 words or so. What am I like? Because it was originally part of Chapter 2 before Chapter 2 got big enough that I wanted to split it up. I am looking forward to this. Again, as stated last time, I am hopeful that we're going to start to get some clues because I'm getting worried. As I know Lan Wangji also is. Wangji's eyes open at 5 a.m. and his brain goes into overdrive, making a list of items to follow up on possible next steps. Today is going to be the day I find him, he tells himself. The tech guys aren't optimistic about Wei Ying's laptop, which does indeed appear to be encrypted to hell and back, but they'll see what they can do. The RFID card is a door key, but they can't tell Wangji much more than that. He calls the manufacturer to see if they can tell who the key might belong to from the serial number. The customer service rep is polite but firm. To preserve customer privacy, the company won't give out that kind of information without a warrant. Wangji starts the paperwork for that, as well as a warrant for Wei Ying's cell phone records. Hopefully they will have found Wei Ying before either warrant comes back, but it's best to get these things in motion as soon as possible. That leaves the notebooks. Wei Ying's handwriting is a large, impatient scrawl. He seems to use the notebooks as part day planner, part sketchbook, part idea repository. It's like being hit with a barrage of thoughts straight from Wei Ying's brilliant, impulsive mind. Wangji aches. I can't remember if it's barrage or barrage. It might be both. I'm going to pause. It's barrage. Okay. Do-do-do. It's like being hit with a barrage of thoughts straight from Wei Ying's brilliant, impulsive mind. Wangji aches. Little of what's there makes any sense to Wangji. Notes like JS array too inefficient and sprites instead of scaling in browser crowd together with reminders that could mean anything. TT JC RE JYBD WC 1P NC SAT. I wish I could actually interpret that for you, but I can't. But it's definitely Zhang Cheng Ri Jiang Yan Li, and then something about Saturday. Okay. A sketch of a park bench, another of what Wangji recognizes as the view from the cafe's front windows, smeared with rain. On another page, a drawing that could be a map or could be a maze. A series of boxes that look like the layout for a web page. An onion with a scowling face. Wangji rubs his eyes and heads to the break room to get some more hot water. He keeps his tea in his desk, but department regulations are very clear on banning electric kettles or personal hot pots, so he's forced to risk impromptu interactions with his coworkers anytime he wants a fresh cup. Usually it's not so bad first thing in the morning. For some reason, most cops don't appear to be morning people, but luck isn't with him today. How's the investigation going? Jiang Wenyan asks. He sloshes coffee into an insulated mug and, Wangji can't help but notice, doesn't start a fresh pot. Fine. Wangji presses the beverage button on the microwave twice. Any leads yet? No. An awkward silence stretches out between them. The microwave hums. With great reluctance, Wangji forces himself to continue talking. We will go interview your sister today. Jiang snorts. You're going out to Carp Tower? He clearly wants Wangji to ask what he means. Wangji is disinclined to do so. That's what Wei Wuxian calls my sister's house, Jiang finally says. Wait till you see it. It's a lot. He stirs a truly grotesque amount of sugar into his coffee. The microwave beeps. Wangji takes his mug and turns to leave, hopefully discouraging further conversation. Fair warning, Jiang says. Wangji pauses in the doorway. My brother-in-law is kind of a dick. Oh. Yeah, I mean, he's fine, I guess. He's nice to my sister. He's just kind of a stuck-up prick. He's like one of those snobby rich kids who think they're too good for everyone. He's always acted like he's hot shit just because his daddy has money. This is a pretty hilarious statement coming from a man wearing a Patek Philippe watch, but Wangji nods gravely, as though he will treat watch out for pomposity as a warning of the utmost importance. Yu Mingzhui is there when he gets back to his desk. talk to my buddy in Major Crimes, he says, because he is not a good morning kind of person, and neither is Wang Ji. When Rohan is indeed the roommate's uncle, and like their actual literal uncle too, their Bobo, not just like, you know. Yi Mingjue waves a hand to indicate the vast and complex array of familial relationships that might fall under the umbrella of uncle. Wen Qing and Wen Ying are both totally clean, though. Well, Wen Ying is apparently not great at parking legally, but other than that. Okay, I'll take one quick break on this. I did, I moved from a place that had, like, normal, meaning high parking tickets, to a place that parking tickets were $5. It was like, okay, actually doesn't make sense for me to pay the meter. Because a parking ticket is $5. And then I got so many parking tickets that the people at City Hall started to know me. And then, yeah, eventually, apparently the police got instructions on how to correctly give me tickets. And then I did mend my ways. So I feel Wen Ying on this, right? If the ticket fee isn't high enough, then there's no point. Okay. No reason to believe Wen Qing was lying when she said she hadn't seen her uncle in years. Wang Ji couldn't figure out if he should hope that Wei Ying wasn't involved in Wen clan activity, since said involvement would put him in a great deal of danger, or if he should hope Wei Ying was involved, since they had no other leads. We should go to the nightclub. Nightless city? You want to just waltz into a known Wen hangout? We can go this afternoon, after we talk to the sister. We should follow up on the envelope and the matchbook. Major Crimes will not like us coming anywhere near their case, Ye Mingjue points out. Wang Ji has already considered this. There's no reason to expect larger gang involvement. He may have received the envelope from one of the club's employees. Ye Mingjue shakes his head. I'm still not convinced we have a case. For all we know, the guy flew to Vegas for the weekend. No. Something is wrong. Wang Ji is certain of it. Ye Mingjue smooths a hand over his mustache, regarding Wang Ji thoughtfully. Wang Ji, he says. Something in his voice makes Wang Ji nervous. He looks down, reopens one of the notebooks on his desk. Wang Ji. Ye Mingjue's gruff voice is gentle, careful. Didi, look at me. Wang Ji's eyes snap up to his partner, surprised at the uncharacteristic endearment. Look, Ye Mingjue raises a stern eyebrow. I trust you. You know that, right? You say you're okay investigating this case. It's not my business to question that or contradict you. But if I'm going to stick out my neck and step on a Major Crimes case for this, the least you can do is tell me the fucking truth about your relationship to this guy. I told you, Wang Ji replies, raising a stern eyebrow of his own. He's a friend. Yeah, so you said, but you made it sound like you hardly knew the guy. I eat at the cafe frequently. He is my neighbor. We have gotten to know each other. Ye Mingjue folds his arms. So, when was the last time you saw Wei Wuxian? Sunday night. He can hear Wei Ying's voice, slurring. You should stay away from me. He shivers. Sunday night? Are you fucking kidding me? That makes you one of the last people to have seen him. He didn't do or say anything unusual. I would have told you if he did. This is fucking... Ye Mingjue scrubs a hand over his jaw and exhales noisily. All right, fine. I will cover for you on this. But if I find out you're keeping something from me that would have helped us find him, I'll have to report you. I'll have to, Wang Ji. You get that, right? Wang Ji nods. He does get it. Good. Ye Mingjue glowers at him, which means he's exhausted his emotional conversation quotient for the day, for which Wang Ji is profoundly thankful. Let's go. Traffic to the east side's not getting any lighter. I assume you're driving, unless you want to hop on the back of my bike. They drive over the bridge and into Medina. The speed limit immediately drops to 25, strategically planted evergreen trees block the view of the city behind them, but leave views of the water intact, giving the illusion they've entered some secluded island getaway. Wei Ying's sister, Jiang Yan Li, lives in a gated community called Meadow Song. Who the hell is the gate supposed to be keeping out around here? Jeff Bezos? Yami Jay snorts as they're waiting for the gate attendant to buzz them through. The houses they drive past are done in a mishmash of styles, from generic 2000s McMansion to Tudor pile to Tuscan villa. Their lawns are uniformly immaculate. The street signs are white letters in a quaint font on a dark brown background, a winning combination of hard to spot and hard to read that is rapidly giving Wang Ji a headache. Fucking rich people, Naming Jue mutters. No offense. Wang Ji is manifestly unoffended. His uncle Qiren would be huffing into his beard about the ostentation on display. Lan Qiren of the Shanghai Lans prefers to be exquisitely tasteful and understated about having more money than God. Carp Tower turns out to be an apt nickname for Jiang Yanli's house, which is done in a blocky, angular, modern style that ends up looking like a shipping container tipped on one end. The walkway from the circular white gravel drive passes over a koi pond drifted over with lotus plants, some of which are starting to unfurl their pink and white blossoms. Wang Ji's not sure how you could even keep lotus plants alive in a cold, dark place like the Pacific Northwest, but he suspects the answer is money. There is a handwritten note taped over the doorbell. Please don't ring. Sleeping baby. In English and in Chinese. They knock instead. After a long moment, a young woman opens the door. Wang Ji recognizes her as the woman Wei Ying had been hugging in a few of the pictures in his bedroom. Jiang Yan Li's smile is like sinking into a hot bath, or biting into a fresh chocolate chip cookie. Warm, comforting, homey, despite the weary lines around her mouth and dark circles under her eyes. She's clutching a roly-poly baby in a red onesie, no doubt the source of her visible exhaustion and of the gooey white blotch of spit up on her shoulder. Thank you so much for coming, Jiang Yan Li says, meeting both of their eyes in turn, as though she is truly grateful that they've come, not just being polite. Aling, say hi to the nice men, she says to the baby, in a sweet baby voice. They're detectives, just like your juju. The baby regards them with suspicion. Clearly, Wei Ying has already taught him to have a healthy distrust for law enforcement. Family photos line the entryway, dominated by a large, striking wedding portrait. Jiang Yan Li, radiant in white, smiles stiffly with her blandly handsome husband, who, give Jiang Wanyan credit where credit's due, does look extremely pompous. They're bracketed on either side by, Wang Ji assumes, their families. The man standing to Jiang Yan Li's right must be Jiang Fengmian. He has Wanyan's strong jaw and Yan Li's kind smile. The woman clutching his arm has Yan Li's dazzling beauty and Wanyan's overall air of being about to snap at any moment. Jiang Wanyan stands behind his father, looking formal and uncomfortable. Tucked into the portrait's heavy wooden frame is a second photo that looks like it was taken with a cell phone camera. In it, Jiang Yan Li still looks radiant in her white dress, but also a great deal more relaxed. Her hair is down, not coiffed into the elaborate style from the formal portrait. The picture may be from earlier the same day, or a different day altogether, it's impossible to tell. On one side of her stands Jiang Wanyan in a dark blue windbreaker. On the other, Wei Ying in a black t-shirt under a black hoodie, his hair a bird's nest. All three siblings are smiling with a sort of desperate, tearful happiness. Jiang Yan Li's lace-draped arms clutching both men tightly to her, Wei Ying's eyes red-rimmed. Jiang Yan Li ushers them into her spacious mid-century modern living room, which is done in minimalist glass and bamboo and gold finishes, and is absolutely littered with plastic toys. She sets the baby down on an activity mat on the floor, where he fixes them with a baleful stare. Thank you so much for coming all the way out here, she says. I know it's an inconvenience, but my husband has to go into work this afternoon, and I didn't want to take Aling into the city by myself.
When did you first become concerned that that Wei Bishan had gone missing?
Yiming Tui asks. Monday evening, she says. Ashian was supposed to come to the house for dinner, but he never turned up, and all my calls went straight to voicemail.
And that was unusual for him, Yiming Tui presses. Your brother led us to believe that Wei Bishan frequently failed to follow through on plans. Jiang Yanli's lips thin into a tight little line. For a moment, she looks exactly like the portrait of her mother in the foyer. Axian had a tumultuous youth. I think Wan Yin still thinks of him as tumultuous sometimes. But he's gotten much steadier with age, and he would never miss an opportunity to spend time with his nephew. She gestures at the baby, who is now yanking at a dangling monkey toy like it owes him money.
His nephew, Yanmingjue said. Then you think of Wei Wuxian as a brother.
He is my brother, Jiang Yanli declares calmly. He lived with us since he was very small. We grew up together.
I don't want to offend you, says Niamingjue,
who Wang Ji knows doesn't care one bit about offending her.
But I've seen his apartment. Doesn't exactly seem like he's living on Jiang Microsystems money to me.
This is the question Wang Ji has come here to ask. As always, he's grateful to his partner for getting there first, even if Niamingjue tends to be undiplomatic in his questioning methods. Jiang Yanli sighs. He and my parents had a falling out about 10 years ago, around the time of his arrest. They're estranged. Axian won't accept any help from my brother or me. He is, she continues with a soft smile, very stubborn. But he is my little brother and always will be. She looks down at her hands, clutching together in her lap. Have you heard from him? Do you know what might have happened to him?
We're still following up on a few leads.
She swallows hard, nodding. I see. Her voice is barely above a whisper. On the floor, the baby has had enough of not being the center of attention. He begins to wail. Jiang Yanli scoops him up, hollow-eyed, and begins to bounce him, looking as if she'd quite like to wail him herself. Meng Ji thinks of Wei Ying. May I? He asks, holding his arms out towards the indignant infant. Oh, do you... Jiang Yanli's chin wobbles. I'm sorry, do you mind? He holds out his arms and accepts the squalling bundle from her, cradling the baby to his chest. Perhaps stunned at this turn of events, the baby's wails subside. He tucks in his multiple chins and regards Wang Ji solemnly. Yimingjue is looking at Wang Ji like he's grown another head. Jiang Yanli dabs at her eyes. I'm sorry, it's just with Axian and the baby...
Take your time, Yimingjue says. Anything you think might be helpful. Even if it seems silly, it could help us track him down.
Ali, a man's voice calls. Have you seen my phone charger? The man from the wedding portrait, Jiang Yanli's husband, bustles into the room, fiddling with his shirt cuff. His dark suit has the beautiful draping that only comes with bespoke tailoring. His hair is slicked back into a perfect glossy shine. His red and gold tie matches his red and gold pocket square. It's still in the car, Jiang Yanli says to him. This is Detective Lan and Detective Nie from the police department. They're here about Axian. This is my husband, Jin Zixuan. Wang Ji tenses up, startled at the name.
Beside him, he can hear Nie Mingjue go, huh.
Jin Zixuan reaches out to shake both of their hands.
Lan, related to the Shanghai Lans? He asks.
Wang Ji nods once, frostily.
I've done some business with Lan Jiyi.
He is my cousin, Wang Ji mutters.
So wait, Yimingjue interrupts. You're the guy Wei punched.
The bland, placid smile dissolves off Jin Zixuan's face. He pinches the bridge of his nose.
I am a...
Sorry. I want to be delivering all of this with the gravity it deserves with Wei Ying as a missing person. He pinches the bridge of his nose.
I am a guy he's punched, yes, he admits.
His wife pats his thigh comfortingly. He sinks down to sit next to her on the couch. Meng Ji looks down at baby Jin Ling, who is warm and soft and milky baby smelling. He gives the baby an experimental jiggle and is rewarded with a sudden dimpled smile. Of course, this baby would have dimples. Meng Ji's thoughts are racing. He's glad for the excuse to avoid eye contact with everyone, particularly Jin Zixuan. Look, Jin Zixuan says, I was still 17 at the time. I was a minor. It wasn't my idea to press charges. My parents insisted. And if you've seen Wei Bishan's record, then you know that that secondary assault charge was dropped. He went to jail for what he did to my cousin, Zixun.
Weibishan punched me in the nose, which, honestly, fair enough, I was being a dick. He and Jiang Yanli exchanged a wry, fond smile. But my cousin went after him for it, and Weibishan fucking took him apart. You probably can't tell it from his file, but the guy can handle himself in a fight. Huang Ji thinks about Wei Ying's uncanny grace, the lean muscles of his biceps, his quicksilver temper. Why was that so hard? Quicksilver temper. Plausible. Axian is a sweet boy, Zheng Yanli adds, taking her husband's hand. He'd never hurt someone just to be cruel, but he feels injustice very deeply, and he'll always stand up for someone if he thinks they need defending. It might sound strange to you, but he was trying to stand up for me. He didn't deserve to go to jail. I hope you'll keep that in mind during your investigation. My family, I tried to get them to drop the charges, especially since Wei Wuxian was over 18, but Jin Zixuan pinches his nose again. That's not really how my family rolls. They've got a sort of scorched earth mentality. Useful in business, he chuckles humorlessly. Less of a charming trait outside the boardroom. Naming Jue takes the two of them through the rest of his questions. No, they don't know of anyone Wei Ying might be staying with. No, he hasn't responded to emails or texts. Yes, they'd seen him about a week before he disappeared. No, he hadn't done or said anything unusual. Meng Ji watches the baby slowly start to nod off in his arms and lets the information wash over him, waiting for anything his mind can grab onto, but nothing comes. Eventually, Jin Zixuan stands up, smoothing the tasteful lines of his slacks back into place. I need to get to the office, he says. Meng Ji and Ye Mingjue stand as well. Jiang Yanli reaches out to gently scoop the sleeping baby out of Meng Ji's arms. There's a damp spot on his sleeve where the baby has been softly drooling. Jin Zixuan hands Wang Ji his business card. Let me know if there's anything else I can do. The card only serves to confirm Wang Ji's sinking suspicions. Zachary Jin, Vice President of Sales for North America, Jin Corp. I know your brother, Wang Ji says. Jin Zixuan looks, if possible, even more pained than he had at the mention of Wei Ying punching him. You do? He asks, his voice tight. Which one? I'll try that again. Which one? Meng Ji avoids looking at Ye Mingjue, who is stiff as a poker beside him. Meng Yao. Oh. Jin Zixuan exchanges a look with his wife. Well, he's not so bad. How many brothers do you have? Meng Ji asks, thinking of the total lack of Jin siblings in the wedding portrait. Until about 5 years ago, I thought the answer was none. Jin Zixuan barks a hard, bitter laugh. But thanks to all the DNA testing kits on the market, new ones just keep popping out of the woodwork. He purses his lips. I don't mean to disparage Meng Yao. He works hard, and I know it's meant a lot to him to get to know our father. It's just been a weird few years. He turns and kisses Jiang Yanli on the cheek, draws a gentle finger down his son's downy forehead. I have to go. I'll walk you gentlemen out. Scene break, and we are back into a flashback. I will say one thing before we get into our flashback. I'm concerned. I'm concerned because what it sounded like of Wei Wuxian being drunk and telling Wang Ji to stay away from him does not sound like typical behavior, and I am concerned that none of this has come up yet. Okay. After the incident at the cafe, Wang Ji spends the rest of the afternoon pacing restlessly, picking things up and putting them down again, unable to focus. Evening finds him sitting at his desk, watching Wei Ying's window and feeling asinine. He knows where Wei Ying lives. He could just go over there if he wants to talk to Wei Ying so badly. But he's never done that before, and he's not sure how well it would be received. So he sits and waits, patient, still, the light slowly dying around him. He's very good at waiting. Finally, as the sky is fading from gold to pink to deep blue, Wei Ying's window opens. Meng Ji watches him haul himself wriggling onto the roof and tries not to think of how far three stories is, or of the paving stones of the courtyard waiting below to snap Wei Ying's bones. When Meng Ji makes his way onto the roof, Wei Ying is slouched back on one elbow, looking west to where a sliver of water is visible between the buildings. The sunset light gilds his nose and cheekbones, staining his skin pink and leaving his eyes in shadow. Lanzhan, Wei Ying raises the ever-present bottle of cheap whiskey in a toast as Wang Ji settles in beside him. The liquor glows amber in the setting sun. Good evening. He crosses one lanky leg over the other, and Wang Ji sees that he is barefoot. There is no reason for the sight of Wei Ying's bare foot to affect Wang Ji the way it does. It's not like he has a foot fetish or anything, but something about the graceful arch of Wei Ying's instep, his long and somehow elegant toes, his skin soft and vulnerable and pink in the sunset light, pierces Wang Ji right to his core. He's overwhelmed by it, the way he sometimes is by flashes of Wei Ying, by his collarbone or his ear or the fall of his dark hair over his shoulder. And that bittersweet, almost sad feeling pours through him and solidifies into a lump that he can now identify as pure, unadulterated longing. Oh no, he thinks, staring at Wei Ying's foot with a mounting sense of panic. Oh no, I'm falling in love with him. Lanzhan? Wei Ying asks. Wang Ji looks up, startled, his eyes wide with fascinated horror, his temples starting to sweat. Are you okay? Oh no. Oh no. Fine, Wang Ji says quickly. He sits up straighter, clears his throat, reaches frantically within himself for his customary impenetrable calm. I'm fine. Wei Ying sits up, mercifully tucking his bare feet under himself, and bumps Wang Ji's shoulder with his. Wang Ji somehow does not burst into flames. You sure? You look kind of freaked out. Wang Ji nods. He looks out towards Puget Sound and imagines plunging himself into it, cold salt water closing over his head. He breathes in through his nose and out through his mouth. Steady, calm. He needs to focus on the matter at hand, which is Wei Ying's work troubles, not Wang Ji's ridiculous feelings. Are you all right? He asks Wei Ying, once he's sure he's regained control of himself. Of course I am. It's a beautiful evening. I've got a bottle and a friend in a view. Why wouldn't I be all right? At the cafe today, you were upset. You said you would get in trouble. Did you? Wei Ying shakes his head at him. You worry too much. He takes a long sip of whiskey and avoids Wang Ji's eyes. Wang Ji waits, riding out the pause, fixing Wei Ying with a stern, expectant look. He knows Wei Ying can't resist filling a silence. Eventually, Wei Ying's eyes slide back toward him. It's fine, Lanzhan, he huffs exasperatedly. He just took the cost of the comped meal out of my pay. I didn't get fired or anything, if that's what you're worried about. That is part of what Wang Ji is worried about, but not the only thing. He keeps waiting. If anything, Wei Ying continues, my manager's done me a favor. He took me off the schedule for the rest of this week and all of next week. Little vacay. I am officially a man of leisure for the next 10 days. He rakes his fingers through his hair with a cynical chuckle. Wang Ji frowns. He knows Wei Ying is in no position to lose more than a week's income. That seems excessive. Well, my boss is an asshole. But everyone's boss is an asshole, and I need the job. He knocks back another pull off of his whiskey bottle, swallowing with a little cough. What will you do? Fuck, man, I don't know. You want to hang out? What are you doing tomorrow? Working. Wang Ji is sorely tempted by the prospect of a whole day with Wei Ying, but that wasn't what he had been asking, and he's not letting Wei Ying divert him that easily. That is not what I meant. Wei Ying sighs. The last of the sunset is dwindling into dusk. The streetlights flicker on, one by one, throwing shadows across the roof. He meets Wang Ji's eyes, and Wang Ji feels like he's stuck his tongue in an electrical socket. There's a sudden, heartbreaking vulnerability in Wei Ying's face. I know. If you need a loan. No. Wei Ying sits up straight. The soft, open look vanishes, replaced by his usual arch smile. Hasn't anyone ever told you not to loan your friends money? You're lucky you have me around to make sure nobody takes advantage of you, he adds, wagging a mock scolding finger. Several people have, in fact, told Wang Ji not to loan his friends money, not that it matters. He's half ready to sign over his trust fund to Wei Ying, if that would help him. Ready to whisk him downstairs and set him up in the guest room and let him live there rent-free for as long as he needs. His mind provides him with an image of what Wei Ying might look like the first thing in the morning, tousled and stubble-chinned and languid from sleep. Not helpful. Also not relevant to the conversation, since Wei Ying clearly isn't going to accept that kind of help from him.
"I was there today," Wang Ji says slowly. "I saw what happened. If you like, I could talk to your manager."
"Oh, hell no," Wei Ying laughs in scandalized amusement. "I'm not going to be the guy who called the cops because he got in trouble at work."
Wang Ji frowns at him.
"Lan Zhan, stop looking at me like that," Wei Ying pouts. "It's going to be fine. I mean, it's going to suck, but I'll figure something out. I always do. I deserve it anyway. It was a stupid, impulsive thing to do. I'm lucky I didn't get fired."
"Those men were behaving badly," Wang Ji says carefully.
"Those men were dicks," Wei Ying snorts. "I'm not sorry I ruined their lunch. It would just be nice if I could occasionally stick up for someone without blowing up my own life."
He sags sideways, leaning his head against Wang Ji's shoulder. Wang Ji focuses on not smelling his hair.
"Ugh," Wei Ying whines. "If I lose this job, I'm so fucked, Lan Zhan. I'm so fucking fucked."
He starts to laugh.
"Someday, I swear, I'm going to learn to mind my own business."
"If you did,"
Wang Ji points out, his voice rasping in his throat,
"you would not be Wei Ying."
"Fair," Wei Ying chuckles. He sits up again. Wang Ji can feel the imprint on his shoulder where Wei Ying's head no longer rests. They sit in silence for a while, Wei Ying drinking and staring out into the night and thinking his million thoughts. Wang Ji breathing in through his nose and out through his mouth and trying to remember what it felt like to behave normally.
"Are you cold?" Wei Ying asks eventually.
Wang Ji shakes his head. The temperature has dropped sharply since the sun went down, but since Wang Ji's heart has apparently decided to become a small nova star, he barely feels the chill.
"So tough," Wei Ying teases him.
"I might climb down and grab a jacket in a minute. Or maybe I'll just put on another layer of good old liquid coat." He holds the whiskey bottle up next to his face like he's in an infomercial for rot gut booze.
"That reminds me," Wang Ji says, "I brought you something."
He reaches into his pocket and pulls out the little brass-colored key. Wei Ying takes it and holds it curiously up to the light.
"A key? To what?"
"To the roof." Wang Ji could not, in good conscience, make Wei Ying a copy of Si Chen's master key to the building, but it had been simple enough to ask the property manager for a key to the roof. The man was so desperate to stay in Si Chen's good graces and continue availing himself of Si Chen's neighborly offers to help around the building, he was more than happy to let Wang Ji have a key. There was no need for him to know that Wang Ji didn't intend to keep it for himself.
"For me?"
Wei Ying's eyebrows lift in astonishment. His eyes grow huge. They flicker up to Wang Ji's face, back down to the key. He opens his mouth to say something, pauses.
"I don't know what to say."
"It would be very inconvenient for me," Wang Ji says, "if you fell while climbing up here. There would be a lot of paperwork." Wei Ying gapes at him open-mouthed for a moment, then bursts into peals of loud, delighted laughter.
"You made a joke, Lan Zhan," he exclaims.
"I can't believe it." He knocks his shoulder against Wang Ji's, chortling. Wang Ji can feel the blush creeping across his face, down his neck. He allows himself a small, satisfied smile.
"Seriously, though, this is very nice of you,"
Wei Ying says when his laughter finally subsides.
"My Lan Zhan, taking such good care of me."
Wang Ji wants to kiss the whiskey off of his lips. Slick and open-mouthed and hungry, press his bony shoulders back onto the roof, sink his teeth into the small hole at the shoulder of Wei Ying's t-shirt and rip the whole thing off of him.
"You're welcome," he says instead.
End of chapter. Author's end notes. The last scene on the rooftop, and my mental picture of Wei Ying's overall look for this fic, is inspired by that one photo shoot Xiao Zhan and Wang Yibo did for Harper's Bazaar China. If you haven't seen it, Google it now and thank me later. In which they are barefoot. And I think Xiao Zhan has the best looking feet I've ever seen on a person,
which is frankly unnecessary for a person who already looks like him. Thanks as always to Duessa and Ericacia for the beta work / general yelling about this story. Coming next week in Chapter 4, two very different lunch appointments, Nightless City. Okay, so that's the end. We don't have any more clues about Wei Wuxian. I continue to be concerned. I like how, I don't think I realized this, that, you know, the flashbacks of the lines that Lan Wangji is remembering Wei Wuxian say are in the dialogue in the flashback. So I think that's really cool to sort of be getting bits and pieces and then more context as we go on, which is clearly the vibe of all of the flashback stuff. Like, I'm sure we're going to eventually find out about what happened on the Sunday night. And Ye Mingjue is so valid to be like, what the fuck, man? And he's going to be validly incredibly pissed when he finds out that Wang Ji is in love with Wei Ying. Like, that seems like important information, you know? Yeah, so gosh, I am glad that I feel like this is working great for usual daily read. As usual, I want to be reading more chapters because I want to know what happens next immediately. Hopefully going to Nightless City in Chapter 4 means we're going to find out some more. Fingers crossed. Hope Wei Ying's doing okay. I mean, I need to just remember, like, I'm pretty sure there's a tag happy ending, but also I have read this before. I don't remember it, but if it wasn't a happy ending, I would not have, you know, marked that I liked it. So everything is going to be fine. We can just hold on to that. Okay. Well, thank you so much for listening. Again, if you want to be joining in on the live reads, just let me know in a comment and I'll send you an invite to the MDZS Podfic Discord server. And I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.